This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
Are you familiar with Regina the Queen?
Yes.
She cast a curse on this land. A terrible, terrible curse. It ripped everyone away to another world.
But we're still here.
This corner of the land was untouched. No one knows why, but something saved us. And for 28 years, we were frozen. And then, time started again.
Welcome to a brand new episode and a brand new season for all of us here at the Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Once again, we're going to evaluate every episode. We're going to spend a little less time than last year just recapping the episodes because we just trust that you've seen the episode and you know what's going on. So we don't want to waste too much of your time on this. And instead, we'll just have extra time to speculate and to reflect upon the things that we've seen. And after all, that's where the fun is, right? So joining me today are the usual suspects, starting with Lisa Jones. Hey, Lisa.
Hi.
How is life in Texas?
We finally have fall weather, so it's good.
Temperatures are going down.
Yes.
Also joining us today, Deborah Shaben. Hey, Deborah, where are you right now?
Currently today, I'm in Nebraska. That changes tomorrow.
You're in Nebraska. And also joining us today is David Handless.
Who is in Nebraska.
Who is also in Nebraska. You know, this is almost like, doing a show like this is kind of like that. Remember that big room, that circular room with all the doors? And I always feel like when I connect with all of you, it's like I'm opening like a couple of these doors and I've got all these different realms, these realities behind those doors. And people talking to me from those, from beyond the door. Which ties in, I think, into this first episode of the new season. Let me ask you, were you excited that Once Upon a Time was finally starting again?
Oh, terribly. The funny thing is my parents decided to have a barbecue at the same time the premiere happened, and I'm like, I'm not going. I'm sorry. I don't care if it's my nephew's birthday. So, and I sat down on the couch, and people were trying to talk to me. I'm like, shh, no.
Go away.
Exactly. I can't talk to you right now.
Lisa, you were excited as well, although you've been able to kind of bridge the gap with the DVD, right? Or the DVD set.
Right. Shelley had bought the DVD set, and we watched a couple of the older, I think she watched a lot more than I did, but I got to watch a couple of the past season. And Sunday night it came, and we always wait until after the kids go to bed to watch it. So I had to wait a couple extra hours, but it didn't disappoint.
It didn't, and I really like the kind of recap show that they did,
yeah,
where they just tie together all the different story threads. And I remember that last year we were talking about, you know, someone should do like a timeline and put all these pieces together in the right chronological order. Well, that was exactly what they did for that particular show, and
they were listening to us.
They did a terrific job, and there were even some things that while watching it, I was like, I totally missed that. And there were some details that the way they just used certain phrases, certain quotes in the bigger context, it was just stuff that I totally missed while watching the episodes. So that was very cool, and it was helpful to kind of just have the entire story in your mind and fresh when you enter the second season. What about you, David? Were you excited?
I was. My wife was, and we watched. And she didn't have a chance for it, but we didn't have the DVD. But Netflix has it on Instant.
Ah, okay.
So
you could go back as well.
Yeah. So I even after the premiere, I've been going back and looking like, okay, what was that from? Without spoiling too much, I was trying to. They had that real weird open. Opening of the premiere,
yes.
And I started trying to go back through the Netflix Instant. I'm like, okay, who the heck could this guy be? I thought I was watching the wrong show.
I thought it was a commercial.
Yeah, I did too.
Oh, really?
I was like, wait a minute. Are we? My wife and I were looking like, is this the right show? No, this is ABC.
It would be interesting to look at the
preempted the show.
Yeah, yeah. It could be interesting to look at the minute-by-minute ratings. Like, they monitor exactly when people switch to another channel. I wonder if some people actually thought that they were looking at the wrong thing and started to, you know, channel surf, trying to find Once Upon a Time.
I wasn't the first one. We were actually, you know, we kind of went over the edge on the geek, on GeekWise, and we were monitoring the hashtag OUAT throughout the whole time, and there were questions going on, like, are we... Is the show on? Okay, we're not the only ones.
Well, it's really good to be back, and what we will do now is to start with our analysis of the first episode of season 2. And so this was the big reveal of a new character. Actually, three new characters right at the beginning, or four new characters.
Four.
Wait a minute. There are way too many of these. Of course, you've got the mystery man.
Five.
We've got
five.
Some mystery man in New York, near Central Park with the horses. Who is that? We're going to talk about that. Then we get introduced to Prince Philip and Sleeping Beauty, just blowing out of the window. Deborah's, I think, theory that who was Sleeping Beauty? Emma?
Yeah.
Although there is a link at the end of the episode, so anyway, you were close, but no cigar. And we discover a mysterious Asian new character, turns out to be Mulan. I never know how to pronounce that.
Is it
Mulan? Mulan. I just came back from China. I should know these things. Mulan. And so, was there any other new character?
Well, the Wraith.
Oh, the Wraith. Yes, yeah. Not many lines in this episode.
but it is a definite character, a plot kind of thing going on there. So
absolutely. So, well, why don't we just start with speculation right away? Who is the mystery man? We've seen a lot of things. He's in New York. He lives in this apartment. There's lots of stuff in the background. And, of course, we have some resources that tell us about that. Inge actually found a link with an article about, you know, who could this mystery man be and what exactly do we see in the background. So but before I recap that, let me just do a short tour of your initial speculation about this. Lisa, who do you think he is?
I guess my initial was either Balefire, Rumpel's son, or Henry's dad.
Those are the same.
Could be the same. Yeah. Those are the two that we keep, you know, waiting for. So I'm kind of hoping it was one of them. And then I thought, okay, has it been a long time since I watched? Is that a character that I just don't remember?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That kept going through my head.
He does look familiar. At least he seems to be in place. It's just one of these guys that totally fits with the Once Upon a Time type of people walking around there.
But he had the Hatter thing on the back wall, so I kept thinking, is that Jefferson? That doesn't look like Jefferson. But.
Mm-hmm. So, do you have any proof for those suggestions of like any details that you noticed that were like, oh, that should be this or that?
No.
Okay.
I had
just wild speculation.
Deborah, go ahead. What's your what's your idea?
There's a couple things in there that I'm like, why does he have a dream catcher? And I was also reading some stuff, and maybe your article compared to what I was I had read too. Somebody thought it might be Peter Pan because of the dream catcher and the Big Ben poster on the back wall, and some other stuff that might indicate London.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I was kind of making that speculation too, just because. I didn't notice those other things, but pretty soon after that, we end up in Mr. Gold's pawn shop, and you see a pirate ship.
Oh yeah.
In there.
Mm.
So I was like, wait a minute. So we got a young man who looks kind of lost, and there's a pirate ship, and well, I don't think he's Captain Hook, so you know, that's why I went that way.
Hmm. Interesting. Haven't heard my own idea yet. I'm glad. Actually, I think it's the rabbit from Wonderland.
Oh,
and
that was my second. That was another guess because of the spectacles that were on the desk when he was trying to shut
the monocle. Actually, there's this one glass thing, and the note that he gets from the pigeon is, it says broken, and then it fades to the clock in Storybrooke. So I'm thinking a broken clock, you know, it could be, I don't know, a watchmaker or some. For some reason, I thought immediately of the rabbit. Something you don't really guess very easily. But I don't know exactly why, because there are lots of objects in the background. Let's talk about that in his apartment that don't really seem to support this and that could actually go in many directions. So this article is on TVLine.com, and I'm always amazed to see how many details people can actually figure out. So the writer of this article found out that this guy works on the Upper West Side because he's cutting through Central Park on his way home, and then he takes a detour to East 47th Street. And then he hops on the N Line subway at Fifth Avenue Station. I can't believe that people just recognize all that. And he lives on Grand Street in Little Italy, across from the famous Piemont Ravioli Company, apparently. So that's, I guess that's what you see from his window. And then he, his apartment has a lot of objects like the pocket watches, mononcles, radios, clocks, cameras, and desk microphones. Yeah, I noticed the microphone, the old-fashioned microphones, and everything is vintage.
You know what I wanted to make? The first thing I thought about when I saw, they weren't just microphones, they were CB radios.
Yeah, yeah, as if to call, you know.
It's like frequency, like that old Dennis Quaid movie where he tries to call himself in his childhood. And
yeah. Or what's that movie with the transdimensional aliens? Contact with Jodie Foster.
Oh yeah.
And then I'm thinking, well, could he be lost? You know, if he's the rabbit, perhaps he wants to try to get home, and he uses those radio microphones to, you know, get in contact with the other side. You know, the other dimension. That's kind of like very vague intuitions that I had. Apparently, there is of course the clean and header sign. There is a rotary dial phone. It's very prominent in the foreground, a brown phone. And I guess a lot of viewers, especially the younger audience, probably doesn't even know what that is. Well, that's what phones used to look like before the iPhone.
Yeah, I was interested. I was like, why is that still sitting on the desk?
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost as if he has been frozen in time, or his apartment has been frozen in time as well. And then there is a very prominent pair of wooden shoe forms. So, and there is a manual pencil sharpener. So I wonder if all that means something, or whether this is just stuff they put in there to actually confuse us and not make it too obvious. And what about that poster in the background on the...
That's Big Ben.
Big Ben?
Big Ben, the clock?
The clock in London.
Oh, no. There's another poster. It's on the left side of the frame, and it shows a red hand. And there is some writing around it or leaves, and then there's... what looks like a little white piece of paper that's entangled with the fingers, and I just can't. It's not clear enough. It's not detailed enough. You'd need a full HD picture to figure out what that is. But I don't know. It's like that has to mean something. But I don't remember any fairy tales with a red hand. So perhaps our listeners have an idea and can let us know so we can.
Well, did you see the heart poster that was next to the window?
A heart poster. Yes, yeah, indeed. Yeah, there's a black and white picture, which is also could refer to Regina's hobby of
collecting hearts.
And again, I'm trying to find evidence for my rabbit theory. If he's from Wonderland and that's a heart, well,
Queen of Hearts.
Know the Queen of Hearts is there, and we also know that cabinet with all the hearts is part of Wonderland. So. Who knows?
Well, now White Rabbit sounds, because now I'm like, oh yeah, and then it's an English fairy tale, so why not have a picture of Big Ben or some English?
Yes, and he actually has an English accent as well. The funny thing is that he's all in black, so that's kind of the opposite of a white rabbit. Could that be that it's the opposite of who he used to be? That he's all like in a funeral costume? I don't know. And then there's more. There are more details in it. This is just the plot thickens. And I love that. This is what we all love about Once Upon a Time. So there is a woman's bowling trophy, apparently, which this little silver figurine that's next to the phone. Mm-hmm. Well, I have no clue what that would mean. But I was thinking, could there be a scene in the Disney version of Alice in Wonderland where something happens with bowling balls or something?
No,
not with the cards.
Croquet. At the end scene, Alice plays croquet with the Queen of Hearts.
Interesting.
So it might not be a bowling ball you're thinking about, but maybe a croquet. I don't know.
Although you play that with little hammers, right?
Right, with mallets, yes.
So that's still a little bit vague. Dreamcatcher? Now, I don't know what the Dreamcatcher is. Enlighten me, because...
Oh, okay. Dreamcatcher is a Native American symbol, and what it symbolizes is it's kind of a superstitious in the sense that it catches your dreams and catches the bad dreams, so you only have good dreams.
And what does it look like?
It's a hoop that looks like it has a spider web through it, and it usually has...
I was wondering about that. It's next to the... It's when he looks out of... tries to close the window, and it's on the left side of the window. I was like, what is that?
And somebody was making... This is why somebody thought it was Peter Pan, because, you know, in Peter Pan, Tiger Lily... Well, you know, he has this thing for Tiger Lily, who's the, you know, Native American princess, the chief's daughter in Peter Pan. And so that might be a reference to Tiger Lily. Mm. But who knows?
Interesting. There is more in his apartment. There is a record player, vaguely reminiscent of the one that Desmond used in Lost in the bunker, the underground bunker.
Yeah.
And a couple of albums. There is a print of John Guliak's 7 Stories and 13 Songs. The image of the red hand actually could also be an album cover, but nobody seems to have identified it yet. I'm sure that people are going to find out. And then this is the best thing. Apparently, they're sticking out from behind a sign. You can see a glimpse of an album by a progressive punk rock band with the title No Means No. And the album is apparently The Day Everything Became Isolated and Destroyed. That's the title of the album. And now you're not going to believe this. There actually people looked up this album on Amazon and looked at the track listing, and I'm just going to read the first 4 tracks. The first one is The Day Everything Became Nothing. So that could refer to the curse, or, you know, the entire, you know, just messing up of fairy tale land by the evil queen. 2, the track number 2 is Dead Souls. You know, Wraith, anyone? Sucking out the soul. 3 is track 3 on that album is Forget Your Life. Isn't that cool? And then the 4th, and this just nails it. The track number 4 is called Beauty and the Beast. Isn't that amazing?
Somebody put a lot of thought into that placement.
Oh my goodness. And there the others could also mean things. 5 is Brother Rat. 6, What Slade Says. 7, Dark Ages. 8 is And That's Sad, S-A-D. And 9 is Small Parts Isolated and Destroyed. 10 is Victory. 11 is Teresa, Give Me That Knife. 12 is Real Love. And 13 is Lonely. I'm thinking lonely, real love. That totally jives with the kind of themes that they love to use in Once Upon a Time as well. So I think that this rock band is going to get a lot of sales all of a sudden, or at least a lot of listens on Spotify and similar services. But I just, I couldn't believe it when I read that. It's like, how can people see it? Because it's really in the corner and you just barely see it. It looks actually like a road sign or something like that. But people figured out that it was a record. And oh my goodness. So I still say it's a rabbit, but it's a hunch. I don't have much proof. But there are more moments during this this episode that people seem to refer to the other, at least to the doors and the other dimensions that we saw. And we know that Wonderland is one of those dimensions behind the doors that we saw. An open invitation to our listeners that if you have other ideas or perhaps we missed something, then let us know. As usual, you can go to sqpn.com and there's this little tab that lets you record voice feedback, but you can also contact us via email, and it's onceuponatime@sqpn.com, or just leave a comment on our blog, which is onceuponatime.sqpn.com. We'd love to get your input on this. That's what I love most about this show. So go ahead.
I was going to say, who do you think sent the postcard?
Interesting. Who sent the bird?
I just love that in the first, what was that whole scene was like 2 minutes. And in the first 2 minutes of the show, they've given us a whole new, you know, character and thing to theorize and think about. And we haven't even gotten into the rest of the show yet. And yes, that they just did a great job at hooking you and going, now what?
And there's more in those first few minutes because why the horses? You know, we start with a horse. And you think that you're in fairy tale land, and then you realize you're in New York.
Right.
But they keep emphasizing the horse and the horse and carriage. Now, is that by accident, or I think actually there's a reason for that. But we'll get to that later when we talk about the meaning of names. There's one other detail. This mystery man is listening to a song on his device. I think he's using, isn't he using a BlackBerry or something? So the phone.
An Android.
Oh, an Android. Could be.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't know.
It didn't look like a BlackBerry. I have one. No.
All right. Well, the song is by Lou Reed, and it's called Charlie's Girl. And so people now are wondering, is there any meaning to Charlie's Girl? Why is he listening to that? Is his name Charlie? So the lyrics.
I just thought it sounds very much like Lou Reed's other song, Back in the New York Groove, or very, you know, or not, I guess that's not Lou, but it has that very New York feel to it. I think that's why they chose the song. It has a very New York feel to it.
Yeah, but there are other New York songs that you could play. So I think there must be a little bit more to it. I don't know. Looking at the lyrics, let's try to find some clues here. I'm just going to read it and just yell if you think you find a clue. Everybody said that you'd better watch out. Man, she's going to turn you in. And me, you know that I thought that I looked out. Now look at the trouble that I'm in. You know you'd better watch out for Charlie's girl. So that's the first part of the song. So she's going to turn you in. Could refer to Emma. Could refer to Regina. You know, he's in trouble. So, and there apparently there's this girl that might be, you know, dangerous. So who knows?
It's interesting that he's using a song from 1976, which kind of is where all of that equipment is from. And that's
true.
Actually, well, no, Emma would be, if she was born in 76, she'd be 36. But it's interesting that it's such retro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely as if he's from another time, and everything in his life, at least, was stuck. And so how did he end up in New York? Because he doesn't seem to be stuck anymore.
And that begs the question, if he's frozen in time, why wasn't he frozen in time in Storybrooke along with everyone else?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that,
And don't we go straight from that into back Storm. To fair.
Yeah,
I thought we went from there to Fairy Tale.
Yes, yes. Well, is it Fairy Tale Land?
Yes.
Well, we don't know.
Oh, let me go through the lyrics just to finish this. The next part of the song is, it happened on New Year's Eve. They said everybody had to leave. They had a warrant in their hand. They wanted to bust the whole band. I said, if I ever see Sharon again, I'm going to punch her face in. You know, you'd better watch out for Charlie's girl. I was like, punch her face in. That was a line. That was actually, there are two people saying that in this episode. It's Prince Charming and it's Regina. Like, I should punch you in the face. No, you should thank me. Or was actually, no, it was Emma saying that to Rumpel. To Rumpel.
Wait, oh, Rumpel, you're right.
Hmm. So is Emma Charlie's girl? Who knows? Watch out for Charlie's girl. Hey, now, she'll turn you in. You'd better watch out for Charlie's girl. That's the song. So, is he afraid of Emma? Is Charlie's girl? Could that be Regina? I don't know. It's interesting. So from there, so we went to Fairy Tale Land. But wasn't this the Mulan scene?
The Mulan being Sleeping Beauty being woken up by Prince Philip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we know that that this part of Fairy Tale Land was somehow protected, and it was not completely gone like the Fairy Tale Land that we've seen all the time in season one, because Regina says that's gone, you know. But Mulan, I think, at the end tells Sleeping Beauty that for some reason something was protecting that area, and so I'm thinking, you know, this is just one of those realms beyond one of the doors, and we've seen that was a red door, and I think we even speculated that that might be, you know, referring to Mulan. So I'm thinking this through a little bit more, perhaps. Everything was destroyed except for the realities beyond those doors that we saw, because the doors were closed, and perhaps that just kept the curse from reaching those realms. And so they might be stuck in, you know, behind that door. How did they get to those doors? I forgot about that. Does anyone remember how you got to that circular room with the doors? Was it through the hat?
Yes, it was through the hat.
But they didn't do that this time when they went through the hat.
Okay.
Or we didn't see.
So the
No, because before they made a choice which one to go through, and this time we didn't see that.
Yeah. So perhaps that was also, perhaps part of it is destroyed. I don't know, or it got messed up, and you get immediately beamed to Mulan land.
Didn't you hear the whole point of using the hat? Mm-hmm. The point of using the hat was to get the Wraith to story fairy tale world.
Yes.
Because it didn't exist anymore.
Yeah, right.
But at the end, you know, you hear Mulan tell Sleeping Beauty, hey, listen, it's still there. There's just a piece of it left.
Mm-hmm.
So in reality, it's still there. So they sent the Wraith and Mary Margaret and Emma to this, you know, to whatever's left of this land.
But perhaps Regina doesn't know that part of Fairy Tale Land is still intact.
Oh, she doesn't. She doesn't know.
Mm-hmm. So she thought it was all, you know, into oblivion, but mm-hmm. it wasn't. And it's interesting because it's going to open up a lot of possibilities for if there are more realms that are intact. You know, they can still bring us. They can still do the dual. How'd you call it? The dual reality stuff that they did in first season as well. You know, switch back between a fairy tale setting and then Storybrooke and our world.
I get the feeling that we're going to see a lot of that this season.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The going back and forth. Yeah. And
well, and now it turns into the story of Emma and Snow trying to get back. So you get that, and it's a kind of a staple plot idea that we've seen in a lot of television series, and it's really compelling. It's like, how do they get back? It's like in The Matrix, how do you get back to the real world? How do you wake up from this world? Or even Star Trek Voyager, you know, how do they get home? It's that whole Like, you got everything in the beginning of the story seems to be fine and okay, despite that little purple cloud that wasn't as dangerous as we thought it was, at least I thought.
That we know of.
Yeah. not apparently. And then, you know, it looks as, well, this is great. Everybody's together. Everybody remembers. And then, of course, the lovers get separated. Prince Charming has lost Snow White again, so it's just this.
Did you notice that they wanted to know if the curse was broken, but why are they stuck there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was something they wanted to go back to their lives. So
yes,
and Regina's saying it doesn't exist anymore, and now Emma and I don't know what to call them, Snow or Mary Margaret. Or did you notice that they use the names interchangeably?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sometimes they refer to them as Snow, sometimes Mary Margaret. I mean, they went back and forth.
So interesting. They are just as confused as we are.
There were some nice moments, though.
I still like that line when Mary Margaret's talking about, you know, one night stand. She mentions Dr. Whale, and Charming almost flips. She's like, "We're on it." It's like, "We're cursed. Moving on."
Yeah,
it's,
and then you want to go, "Wait, you were married."
Wait. It's like, you were married to that blonde girl, so let's not talk. And,
Okay, what about Dr. Whale?
Wait, before we go to Dr. Whale, there is an interesting development in the chat room. I'm so glad that we have this live audience that thing's along with us. Mike has found a fantastic clue as to the identity of Charlie's girl in the song, in the lyrics. Mike says, you know, Charlie's girl is Alice in Wonderland. Because, if Emma is Alice, then it would be Emma. But here is his line of reasoning. The story Alice in Wonderland was written by Lewis Carroll, right? But Lewis Carroll is actually a pseudonym of a person called Charles Ludwig Dodgson, Charlie. He was an English author, mathematician, logician, Anglican deacon, and photographer. Photographer. Remember the cameras, the photo cameras?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. So Charlie's girl is Alice. And then, of course, the question is Alice Emma? Or is it going to be another character that we're going to be introduced to? That is great, great work, Mike. Thank you so much. So we figured out who Charles is. Now, what about Dr. Whale? Because the question is asked. The question is asked specifically in the episode. It's like, who are you?
You're not my prince.
You're not my prince, and that is my business, he says.
Mm-hmm. Nobody knows who he is. That's a little interesting. And he doesn't want to tell them.
Yeah, why not?
And why don't they know him? That's weird.
It's so strange. Yeah, because nobody recognizes him, right?
Huh, no.
So is he just the whale from Pinocchio?
Well, it's true. And, you know, that was my original theory with him.
Yeah, I get the feeling they're going to make him somebody important or somebody bad. You know, kind of like that whole Red Riding Hood is the wolf thing. They're going to do something crazy with him. I just don't know what it is yet.
Some people thought he might be Captain Hook.
No, we know he's not because they've already posted the pictures of who is.
So that's true.
Okay. True. No spoilers yet, right? We keep the spoilers for the end of the episode, as usually. You can safely continue to listen to this episode. We only talk about the episodes that have been aired, and then towards the end, if there is anything noteworthy, we will keep it for the end of the show. So, Dr. Whale, but it's interesting. I wonder if that phrase, "You are not my prince," has more meaning than we think. You know, why wouldn't he be his prince? Why would he say that? I don't understand it.
That makes me think that he knows him, or maybe he knew him before he was the prince, but he knows he was the shepherd.
Mm. Oh.
You know, that he knows that whole, his story.
Could he be one of the soldiers that we see in this whole, no, wait.
One of King Henry's,
could he be from a different realm?
That's possible too. He could be from a totally different reality and ended up there. Inge in the chat room is like, perhaps Moby Dick.
Well, if he is Monstro, here's what I thought. Well, his prince would actually be King Triton because he's under the sea.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Hey, could this be part of the way that they're going to bring in Little Mermaid?
Little Mermaid.
And that they're going to spin out a whole story with an undersea realm?
I know you're looking forward to that, but yeah,
that'd
it could be.
That'd be cool.
You better not be Sebastian.
No.
Yeah.
Captain Ahab could also be. Well, anyway, it's interesting stuff, but very revealing that nobody knows who he is. So yeah, I actually like that idea that he's from another realm behind another door, and that's the whole undersea reality, and they can bring in, you know, plenty of things. Actually,
one.
No, go ahead.
One question to see if we can go that route. I mean, before Dr. Whale said, "You're not my prince," did anyone say out loud "Prince Charming" or anything like that that would have told him that Whale that he was a prince? You know what I mean?
Well, I think everybody was referring to him as Prince Charming or Charming. I know Mary Margaret had always referred to him as, well, not Mary Margaret, but Snow had always said
okay,
Charming.
Mm-hmm. What he means, since the curse was broken, did anyone say, oh, that's who that is? So that would be interesting if Whale knows who Prince Charming is, but Prince Charming doesn't know who he is.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's where my question was. If you know, if he recognized him as Prince Charming, would he still be from another world?
Yeah, I don't remember that he identifies anyone. But he
does a good job of confusing things.
And they do have their memories intact of what happened in Storybrooke, okay. So he can just use that. So he knows everybody in the town, but he doesn't really know who they are.
Did you notice Mary Margaret started acting more like Snow?
Oh.
I mean, Mary Margaret had always been kind of quiet and timid, but, you know, just where Snow had been this, you know, I'm going to kick some rear end, you know, kind of princess. And Mary Margaret, after the curse was broken, you know, she really stepped up and started taking charge and being assertive.
Right.
And, you know, a little more Snow than Mary Margaret. Mm-hmm.
And very much a mom. It's like,
yes,
we need to talk.
All of a sudden, you
talk.
Saw all of that come full circle. And
I loved
how she said, the first thing I'm going to do is find my daughter. I thought she was going to say, the first thing I'm going to do is find Regina. And no, it was, I'm going to find my daughter.
And she was right there. And then I love that Henry enters the scene and he's like, grandfather? That was brilliant.
I guess. Kind of puts it all into perspective right there, that whole family thing.
And I really like the character development there, that Emma is not excited at all. And she has this issue with her parents that she was left alone. She was abandoned, basically. And she even resents their fairy tale morale. It's like, that's what you guys do. You sacrifice yourself. But, you know, nevertheless, you left me alone. And so she's reasoning from a totally different perspective. It's like, I understand the heroics in your reality, but in my world, this is not, you know, this is not what we do.
She's still that hurt child.
No matter what the circumstances, for 28 years, I only knew one thing. That my parents sent me away.
We did that to give you your best chance.
You did it for everyone, because that's who you are. Leaders, heroes, princes and princesses, and that's great and amazing and wonderful, but it doesn't change the fact that for my entire life, I've been alone.
But if we hadn't sent you away, you would have been cursed too.
But we would have been together. Which curse is worse?
And the whole notion of sacrifice comes back several times in this episode, and in a way, she was sacrificed by her parents to be the savior of the world and of fairy tale land and of Storybrooke, but she was not actually involved in that decision. She was just, you know, given up. Like, you go
save
the world.
Think about it. She didn't have her parents, and then she didn't have her child because she gave him away.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, she really was alone, and.
Just, I like
you know, they did really good with Emma.
Yes.
You know, trying to fight that rather than just all hugs and kisses and woohoo.
Exactly. I think it just lends much more credibility to her character, and it makes it much more of a modern TV series instead of just a fairy tale. And it just adds complexity to that relationship, which I hope they're going to not resolve anytime soon, because I like it. It's adding more. And now she's stuck with her mom in another realm. And there is animosity between the two, at least from Emma's side. And I guess it's setting it up for another classic, almost like a buddy story. Like, we're kind of condemned to be together, and they will have to discover that they're mom and daughter, or they have to kind of acquire that again or rediscover that. But it's not automatically, you know, oh, now everything is good and well, and we love each other, and hugs and kisses, like you say, yeah. Lisa. That love will need to be proven. It needs to be conquered. Mm-hmm.
Well, what was great about their relationship last season was, you know, Emma was kind of the big sister. I mean, she really advised and kind of looked after Mary Margaret, you know, always giving her advice, and, you know, they lived together. And now all of a sudden that role is completely reversed, kind of turned upside down. And Mary Margaret immediately is, you know, now I'm the mom and you're the child.
Yep. Yeah.
It just changed. So it's exciting to me that they went back to what we assume is fairy tale land together, because that is, you know, Mary Margaret's turf. I mean, Emma no longer is going to be the, you know, I'm in control. I've got everything. I can do all. Now all of a sudden it's Snow. You know?
And that's going to be tough for Emma.
Yeah.
You know, she's always been on her own, and she now she's being forced back into the role of a child, but will she accept it? I wouldn't. That would be very irritating to have your mom all of a sudden giving you advice, whereas you have always been the one in charge.
Right.
And so how is she going to deal with that character change in Snow?
That's going to be really exciting.
And I love the fact that Henry is now, you know, with Prince Charming, with his grandfather. So that's an interesting relationship as well. And what I love is that there is actually these two, Henry and Prince Charming, have something in common, and that's faith. And that's another theme that was mentioned, you know, Prince Charming reaffirming, you know, it's going to be okay, and I'm going to find them back, and because I have faith. And that's exactly what set Henry apart in the first season. He's always the one who had faith, and it was his faith that made him sacrifice himself, you know, eat from the apple, and thereby actually just setting the whole resolution, the whole first, you know, the ending and the saving of the world, or the breaking of the curse, in motion.
It was interesting. Again, Prince Charming also came out of, you know, David had been kind of a, you know, couldn't make a decision, you know, wasn't really sure what was going on in his life. And again, he's assertive. He took charge. Said, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to take Henry. We're going to have torches. You know, again, he brought that Prince Charming, came back.
Yeah, which, I like it.
Yeah, I do too.
He's no longer a wuss.
Yeah.
And that's
well,
good.
Well, that Regina, I mean, not having magic and then something happening.
All right, well, we are going to talk about two new characters that we've been introduced to, Philip and Mulan. But before we do that, let's take a short break. And I'm going to take advantage of the break to talk about one of our sponsors, and it is a company that I have grown to appreciate quite a bit, because they offer great service for a really great price, and it's Bluehost. We are an affiliate of Bluehost, and Bluehost is a hosting company, if you're not familiar with it. And what I like about it is that they have this super easy dashboard with which you can install a blog. I know that we have a lot of listeners that might have a website elsewhere, you know, on a free service, or you might have a blog on blogger.com, or but a lot of us are aspiring to have something a little bit better than that, because it's always a bit limiting if you're using free services. So you want to have your own domain name, for instance, or you want to have a real WordPress blog that you can totally control. You know, WordPress.com is a great service, but you know, it's, if you want a little bit more than the standard themes, you have to pay extra. Well, what I like about Bluehost is that they will offer you that freedom, but for a very, very reasonable cost. It's actually just $6.95 per month. And if you sign up for a year, You even get a .com domain name included in the price. And another thing that I like is that, you know, I'm not technical at all, and at one point I wanted to have my own blog. And with Bluehost, it was just a matter of literally clicking one button, and I had to wait for a minute or so, not even a minute, and then boom, it was there. And it was a full-fledged professional WordPress blog, and I could start to install these fancy themes and everything, and I have my own fatherroderick.com domain name. And they make it so easy. And lastly, what I like about their service is that you don't never have to worry about extra costs. You know, there are these services where you set up a website and they kind of cap your bandwidth. And if all of a sudden your website gets very popular, then you have to pay for the extra bandwidth that it consumes. Well, not with Bluehost. They will never charge you extra. It's all included. You've unlimited storage space, and you've got unlimited bandwidth. And so if your website or your blog suddenly gets linked to by a big website, let's say CNN links to you, or ABC, because you've got a great blog post about the identity of Mystery Man, then, you know, you don't have to worry at all about all sorts of hidden costs. So if you want to sign up, I'd invite you to, or just check it out, go to sqpn.com/Bluehost. So that's sqpn.com/Bluehost. And if you sign up for an account with them, and you can always, of course, stop that after a while and move your stuff elsewhere because they're using these web standards. But if you do so, you signing up actually will also benefit our podcast, because they will give us a little kind of a finder's fee for that. So we thank Bluehost for sponsoring our show. And again, just go to sqpn.com/Bluehost for more information.
A girl. Woman. My name is Mulan.
Well, let's talk about Mulan and Prince Philip. They're in a realm, and I never thought that I would see Mulan teaming up with a prince from another fairy tale, and that together they would save Sleeping Beauty, and that apparently there's more going on between Mulan and Prince Philip, and then we would actually get introduced to the first monster of season two, the Wraith. Now, I have to start with you, Deborah, as our resident Disney expert. Just give me your thoughts, because I'm so looking forward to your take on all this. You know, Sleeping Beauty, The Wraith, Mulan. Just let it out.
it's funny because I've been preparing for the Mulan backstory for a while now, because she's honestly one of my favorite Disney heroines. I love her. But I want to start with The Wraith. Because yes. I was like the rest of you, I said, why all of a sudden did we go to Harry Potter?
You know, yes.
What's with the
Dementor.
Yeah. But then they kept referring to it as a wraith. And I'm like, well, okay. So I went and did a search of a couple things. And actually, wraith is a Scottish word for ghost.
Oh, okay.
And it's, there is, if you go to Wikipedia, there is a huge list, well, not huge, but a fairly substantial list of wraiths throughout fictional work as well as movie work, entertainment work. And most notably is like Marvel Comics, which is owned by Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So X-Men had a wraith, and there's a couple other. Spider-Man had a wraith, although he's DC, isn't he?
No, Spider-Man's Marvel, too.
It's Marvel, too.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow, interesting. Okay.
He's going to be part of the Avengers before we know it.
Yeah, exactly. And some other, and it might be an homage to a video game where they had a soul sucker who is also a wraith.
Hmm.
I think it was, I can't remember, something of Heroes of New Earth, where there's a hero who's a wraith.
Okay.
So it could be somebody who was writing and said, oh, I want to use this video
JK game. Rowling actually used existing imagery for that.
Exactly.
You know, the way the movies depicted it might have been a little bit different from what she originally, you know, imagined herself while writing it. So, but it's kind of the same ragged clothes and the same soul-sucking thing. With this, even the special effect looks a little bit the same, even though the Dementors are sucking it in through their mouth, and here they're using their hand.
In Stargate Atlantis, the Wraith were the primary bad guy, I guess you could call it.
Oh, okay.
Their foe, and they sucked with their hand.
You know what my first association was? It wasn't J.K. Rowling. I was thinking, ooh, that's a Jawa. with the little light eyes, you know?
That's funny. Yeah. Well, Shelley texted me and said, what's with the Harry Potter thing? And I've never, I will confess right here, I've never read Harry Potter. I've never seen it. So, and I immediately went to Stargate because that's, the Wraith were huge on Atlantis.
Oh, okay. So.
But they didn't look like that.
Never seen Stargate Atlantis.
No, they look kind of like Rastafarian zombies.
Right, right.
So the whole idea of this Wraith, it appears from this amulet, but we don't get that much backstory yet.
And I looked at the amulet, and did anybody else think Native American like Phoenix Rising amulet? I'm like, that looks like the sign of the phoenix, but
yeah, it definitely did look like a bit like a bird or something.
It's kind of weird.
And there's a glimpse of the backside of the amulet, which we don't get to see in when they're still in that castle of Sleeping Beauty. But in the prison cell, when Gold, Mr. Gold, turns it around, or he swings it, and at one point, and it's just a fraction of a second, you see the backside. And I just couldn't – it's a much more kind of organic type of picture on the other side. It's not that geometrical thing. It looks more like – well, actually, it looks like wraiths circling around. But it's just a glimpse, and it's not very clear. So I wonder if we get the backstory of that whole amulet and the whole wraith thing. And perhaps the other side of the amulet is kind of a counter curse or something. I don't know. Just thinking out loud. But it is scary. And according to Inge, Mulan actually calls it by its Chinese name.
Mm-hmm.
Something like Jin
Sing. And remember back when we were talking about Aladdin and we were talking about the origin of the word jinn?
Mm-hmm.
Could be, ghost. Could be.
Well, and in
because we were thinking jinn as in genie.
Oh, yeah, genie in a bottle.
Yeah. That's. I guess we could talk about Mulan now.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're not familiar with the Ballad of Mulan, it's an actual poem from the 6th century in China. So it's very, very old. Told in oral tradition, so there's no original poem left, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all based off of a legend that a woman, or she wasn't even a woman, she was like 12 years old, she takes her father's place in battle, and because she's kind of boy-like, nobody can tell whether she's a male or female. And when she puts on the armor, she embodies both characteristics of male and female, yin and yang.
Hmm.
And it's kind of the idea that, you know, of achieving balance and achieving honor and loyalty to family. And whether or not some people say she was a real character, but I believe she was more of a folk character.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because it would be illegal to join the army as a woman, obviously.
She always makes me think of the story of Joan of Arc.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of
that's
the
exactly
same, like
thinking.
A girl dressing up like a soldier and nobody knows that's a girl.
Yep, and she goes off and wins the battle and wins the war, just like Joan of Arc.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a very Joan of Arc kind of feel to it, the whole story.
But it's much older, probably.
Yeah, Joan of Arc is 14th century.
Yeah.
And 6th century is Mulan.
Wow. So, yeah, that's definitely old.
The Chinese always do everything first.
Yes. By the way, I really liked the character and the way it was done. And the actress, I think, did a terrific job. And I think that we're going to probably see more of her because it's they're clearly stuck with Emma and Snow now in the same realm, so they might team up. It's going to be girl power.
Girl power. Well, and I had my 16-year-old niece who was sitting next to me on the couch, and she had never watched Once Upon a Time. So I was explaining everybody to her as we were watching it. And she, when they explain Mulan and that Mulan was in love with Philip, she's like, wait, no, that's weird. And she didn't like it at all. And I said, well, that's just part of the show. And she's like, well, what about her prince? What about Shang? And I'm like, well, we'll probably see him later, too.
Oh, interesting. Yes. Well, and we don't know for sure if there is real love or whether this is just a very fond, you know, relationship because they've been going through so much together. To me, it was more like that. And then I was like, oh, yeah, Sleeping Beauty is just jealous and she's projecting her own fear on Mulan, that she's a rival. And I think that we'll discover that there's more to, you know, that backstory. And and Philip, is he the knight in Sleeping Beauty also called Philip?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What I thought was interesting was that Philip, the meaning of Philip is actually means fond of horses. The name. And I was like, oh, didn't the episode start with a horse? So could that be a little play on, you know, on the name and kind of already kind of referring to Philip later on?
Did you look up Mulan's name?
No.
It means moon lily.
Ooh, moon lily.
I know there's a better translation than that, but it's the so that's what her name means.
And then the princess in the Sleeping Beauty princess is apparently called Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know if that's from the original story as well.
Yes, it is. Princess
Interesting.
Aurora.
Because Aurora means dawn. And so it's almost as if Mulan, meaning moon, what was it? Moonshine? No? Moon?
Moon lily, yeah.
Moon lily. You know, like moon lily and dawn, it's almost like an opposition. It's like the morning dawn, and then you've got the early sunrise, and then you've got the moon. So perhaps that's how they play out these two characters. It's moon versus sun. It's Mulan versus Aurora, Sleeping Beauty. I didn't really care. I didn't like the character of Aurora. I mean, it's a great actress, but it's like she doesn't feel very sympathetic to me. I mean, she's just saved by her prince, and then 2 minutes later, it's like, oh, you're with that girl. It's like, come on, be a little bit more, you know, happy.
Like priorities. We're in incredible danger. We've just broken the curse. We have to get you to safety, and now you're going to give me crap. Oh,
yes. and she was. Did you notice that she wore this little pearl around her neck? And it made me think back of that other princess in season one.
Midas's daughter.
Yeah, it was like apparently, if you wear one of those pearls, you're just going to be a very nasty person, or just a very cold lady.
She's very high maintenance.
Yes, probably.
Well, I thought it was interesting because she said to Mulan, you know, don't talk to me about sacrifice or something. And I thought, oh gosh, there's going to be a whole backstory of how she got to be,
yeah,
you know, the one with the spinning wheel and the, absolutely, you know, falling asleep. It's not, you know, they're going to twist it.
Well, so. And then I'm thinking spinning wheel. You know who's going to be involved if there's a spinning wheel, right?
Well, and you saw Mr. Gold was doing his spinning wheel, you know, in this episode.
So yeah, there has to be a tie in there as well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Watch. He's going to be spinning wheel.
Well, and the spinning wheel was right next to the Sleeping Beauty when she was sleeping.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. Well, perhaps he has several spinning wheels, you know.
And one last thing about Sleeping Beauty, somebody pointed this out, you know, in the original Disney, the fairies were trying to decide whether she wanted to be a pink dress or a blue dress.
Oh, really?
And she's a purple dress, which is if you mix
it's
red
mix.
And blue together.
Oh, wow,
it's
that's
purple.
That is too funny. That is,
I remember
great.
As a child being very angst ridden over it was going to be pink or blue. I mean, it was like a big deal when I saw it.
Yeah, David, I don't think that we as guys worry too much about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I kind of skip over that part.
But it's very cool to see that somehow that amulet ends up in Mr. Gold's possession. And we don't know that story either. But because Mulan gives the amulet to Aurora in a little bag. So perhaps Mr. Gold gets hold of it because, you know, every magic comes with a price. Perhaps there is a price to pay, and that was actually the price that she paid to Mr. Gold.
I'm going to wait, but those stories happened opposite.
Oh, wait. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So Mr. Gold had it first. And then when the Wraith went through the hat, that's what brought it to Aurora.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, the whole timeline is
They showed it.
Yes.
They showed it, I guess, that way so you didn't realize what was happening. But then you realize that the Wraith came through with Mary Margaret and Emma to them. So, yeah, it was... That was kind of an exciting moment when you realized what the order,
it's the opposite order. Chronological order. Where's my flux capacitor?
Yeah, that's what confused me. It was like, so that Wraith, the Wraith that was in Storybrooke is the same one that just killed Philip.
Right? Fascinating. Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. That was just one like, oh man, that. And so just starting as of right at the very end of the episode, now they should be in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they should be in sync with Storybrooke and the fairy tale world.
Yes.
Ouch.
Which means that Aurora has it to use. I mean, the Wraith is in their realm, and she has it to use, I guess you'd say, as a weapon, you know, from here going forward.
Yeah.
So why? Okay, here's my question. How did they know Mulan and Philip that it had been exactly 28 years? And if it had been exactly 28 years, why didn't they age?
Well,
they were frozen.
They
right?
were frozen in time. So apparently, after the curse, all these other realms beyond the doors, they just all were fixated in place.
So they were all so the theory is all the realms were frozen together,
I think.
When Emma released the curse, they all woke up together.
I think so. Well, or when Emma entered their world, that's when everything
because they would have had to have time to go find their safe haven.
Yeah, what about that safe haven? Any ideas what that could be?
My thought was Neverland.
Mine too.
Neverland?
Yeah. That would be one way to tie the whole Captain Hook, Peter Pan thing into it, I'm guessing.
Neverland, interesting. Where nobody ages. Where time stands still.
Oh, there you go. So maybe they were
the broken clock. Wait a minute. There's a broken clock in the Captain Hook story.
Right.
Oh, that's right. The
big... And Big Ben is in Peter Pan too, because that's where the children land.
Oh my goodness! And then that little card at the beginning might refer. We think it refers to the clock in Storybrooke, but it might actually refer to the clock in Neverland.
Could be.
Ooh, I'm liking this. I don't understand. Now my whole theory is messed up, but I like it. I like it.
But that's what's great. If we could predict it, it wouldn't be as much
fun.
Yes,
yes. But there's definitely a lot of time. Oh, this is definitely gearing up for Neverland. And then I was also wondering about, you know, what exactly protected these realms from the curse?
Yeah.
And what is stronger, what is more powerful than Regina? And all of a sudden it clicked. It's like, it's got to be the Queen of Hearts. Her mom is more powerful than Regina. And we know that her mom is behind one of those doors, presuming that she is the Queen of Hearts, which I think she is. And so that would make sense that somehow her power, the power of the Queen of Hearts, protected all these alternate realms from the curse from her daughter, because she's more powerful than her daughter.
Well, let's talk about power for a second, because were you intrigued that the minute that, well, Regina's trying to get the hat to work and she's not getting it to work because her magic's not working on the hat, and then Emma touches her and it all of a sudden sucks her in?
Yep, yep. Well, and then her power comes back as soon as Emma's out of the way.
Well, as soon as Emma touched her, the hat worked.
It's like she jump started Regina or something.
Oh, you think that was the moment that she got her powers back? I was like, oh, Emma needs to be gone for her to have her powers. But that might be true, actually, that she transferred the magic back to.
I figure it has something to do with Emma, the power, the magic, and well, but Gold didn't have any trouble with his magic.
No, no.
So I don't know.
Although he's not spinning gold,
exactly.
So.
That's true.
Does he have all his powers?
He was spinning just normal.
I mean, gold always needs a tool, like a device or a concoction to create magic. he doesn't seem to be able to do the, you know, poof thing anymore like he did in in Fairy
Tale
World.
Didn't they make reference to the through the whole episode how magic is different in that world?
Yeah, because
the blue fairy said she couldn't do anything.
Yeah. So perhaps magic in this world, in our world, is relational. And you need somehow touch or relationship or whatever to make it work.
But if that's the case, then how did Regina get those sprouts to try to choke Charming?
Again, I think that you might be going back to Emma, because Emma kind of bent, just by her being around, the rules seemed to bend a little bit.
Hmm. Oh, that could be true. Yeah, that she's actually preventing bad magic, or prevents magic from being used in a bad way, or something like that. And
I don't have a full reasoning for it, but just I'm like, she's Emma, she's the main character, she can make things happen. So,
and the thing is, of course, that now Regina has full power, so now she's extremely dangerous, and she's going to terrorize Storybrooke.
But
so,
did you see Henry's face? You know, she's about to choke Prince Charming, you know, and Henry comes in. Mom!
Yeah.
And she's just like, oh, sweetie. Oh, no, I wasn't. No, you know.
I'm not going to hurt your little friend.
Yeah.
No, not your grandpa. No.
Not until you're out of sight.
Yeah.
But I liked actually that you do see a little bit of conflict in Regina, and he makes her promise, you know. This is interesting. We've another theme in this first episode, promises. You know, we got the broken promise between Belle and the Beast, you know, Gold. Yeah. Then we've got the promise between Henry and his stepmom. And was there another promise? I don't remember. But and so it's all about lies and truth and promise and keeping your promises and what is going to be more profitable in the end. Breaking your promise out of, you know, profit like Gold does. Or because he wants vengeance and he kind of bends it around, but it's ultimately a play with words. Or is it going to be a promise that's kept? I'm going to be, again, I'm still hoping for some kind of redemption of Regina. Mm-hmm. And so this might be the beginning of that. Perhaps she will keep that promise because she loves Henry too much. I don't know.
Yeah. And did you, I forgot.
Yeah, it just occurred to me, you know, that maybe Emma is Alice in a sense because she got the Mad Hatter's hat to work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Could very well be. Yeah. And I mean, she goes through the hat and she is now in, well, not in Wonderland, but in a similar realm as Wonderland.
She perhaps fell down the rabbit hole.
Well, but that's not the rabbit's hat. But it is a
hole.
It's
the same symbolism.
Yeah, it's the same symbolism, definitely. And then, of course, Snow goes after her, which is, I think, cool. And then poor Prince Charming. He's feeling the ground. Like, where did that hole go? And it was similar.
Lands on top of the hat. Funk.
And it's kind of the same thing that we saw happening between Gold and his son, you know, who fell through this hole. And
interesting that Prince Charming is left behind to kind of run things and be in charge, and he does. Of course, I love the fact that he immediately turns on Regina.
Yeah, well now it's between. It used to be between Regina and Emma. Now it's between Regina and Prince Charming. So that's gonna be cool. I think it's time to slowly start wrapping up this first episode because we can talk about this a lot more, but we also need to have a little bit of compassion with our listeners who've been listening for more than an hour now. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners will also listen to other podcasts about Once Upon a Time. And so we always have a lot of homework after each episode. There's so much to listen to, so many secrets to uncover. But we can always continue our conversation on the blog. And the address of the blog is once again onceuponatime.sqpn.com. It's onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and we'd love to hear your feedback on our bantering and on our speculation, especially if you don't agree or you have a theory that is makes a lot more sense than ours. So go check it out, onceuponatime.sqpn.com. And well, let me make a final round. Is there anything else you want to add to the discussion? Let me start with David.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Regina, if Regina does intend to redeem herself or not, or with Rumpelstiltskin. Both of them have both of them have kind of been given, I don't know about a mission, but, you know, mm-hmm. by two people that, you know, both of them have people that they love in their lives now who want them to act better. And let's see if either one of them actually even tries. Rumpelstiltskin went ahead and went around Belle without even giving it a second thought. So let's see if Regina even gives this a shot.
Very well. We'll see. Lisa, what about you?
Oh, I don't know. I watched it with my daughters again last night. This was the first time my daughters had ever watched the show.
Ooh.
So my oldest is 10 and my little one is 6. So I was worried about the rape scene for her. She mm-hmm. did okay. But it was fascinating to me to watch it through their eyes.
Yeah.
The first show ever and explain it to them. And then even this morning on the way to school, they were asking me questions. And
oh,
so
cool.
it kind of, I don't say reinvigorated, it gave me a whole new outlook on it. And I'm really excited for this season and the opportunity to share it with my kids.
It's going to be interesting to have their feedback also a little bit through you and to hear how they look at things, because they know these fairy tales probably even better than we do. Except for Deborah, of course.
Confused. They're like, that's not Sleeping Beauty. That's not what she looks like. I'm like, just hang on, sweetie. You know, like, it's okay.
Great. Yeah, I hope we see the dragon.
Yeah.
If there is a dragon.
Well, that was the dragon that was slayed in the season.
She was already killed.
Oh.
Yeah, she was already.
Yeah.
Okay.
And was the dragon that Emma killed in the last episode of last season.
Of course. Actually, Maleficent was even mentioned. Oh, did you notice? Yes. This is another detail. I think that, Sleeping Beauty says, you know, first Maleficent went after my mom and then she came after me. I was like, mom, what? What happened there?
Open the door.
That's gonna be another interesting story to discover this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because that could be, there was a way back when we met Maleficent, Regina talks about how her curse was so easily broken. So mm-hmm. is this the second time around the Sleeping Beauty type story has happened?
Could be. Deborah, final thoughts?
Oh, geez. I don't know if I have any real final thoughts other than I'm waiting to see if they end up in China. In Mulan's storybook, if there's
so
a
cool.
portal that Mulan knows about.
Oh, I hope so. I really hope so.
That would be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would actually kind of jives with my final thought. I'm thinking that this season sets itself up as a kind of a traveling story where we will follow Emma and Snow and perhaps also Sleeping Beauty and Mulan trying to find their way back to Storybrooke. And we will see a parallel story where I think Prince Charming and Regina and Mr. Gold kind of fight it out in the real world. And I think what to me would be a fascinating way to tell this story of the way home is if they would go from portal to portal. And they'd start in this in the Sleeping Beauty realm. But it looks kind of like a boring environment. It's just a desert and there's this one castle and there doesn't seem to be much else going on. So what if in every episode they will go to, you know, another dimension? And I remember that in an interview, the writers actually hinted at that. It's like, remember those doors. That's going to be in season 2. So I think visually that would be very interesting to see another reality every time. And I guess that one of the next ones is going to be Neverland. Or Never Neverland. Is it Neverland or Never Neverland? Or Never 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 Neverland.
It's never
Neverland.
Neverland.
Okay. With the broken clock. Anyway, thanks to all our listeners for joining us in this new season. And I hope you'll stick with us and also definitely check out the other great, great Once Upon a Time podcasts. You can never listen to too many OUAT podcasts in a week. And so I'm looking forward to listening to their take on this. That's what makes this so much fun. It's all the different perspectives and then one podcast discovers this and that, and then another blog posts this and that. So keep sharing the fun, and we will see you hopefully next week for another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Till then.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.